Ladies and gentlemen, you tuned in to Walker the Walker. Got a good one for y'all today, man. I'm your man, Lou Walker. Sitting across from me is the OG himself, OG Joe. OG Joe, what's going on, boss?
Hey, everything is still happening, man. It hasn't changed.
Yeah, I know that's right. I know that's right, man.
Everything is still happening. Stuff that we can do without is happening, so we have to deal with it.
Most definitely. I mean, a lot of things that we can't control for change. Some things we can't, but ultimately it's still happening.
Yeah, yeah. And it's going to continue to happen until we figure out a few things. I think our focus is someplace else, not on correcting things. We're trying to push an agenda. Everybody has a different agenda. And I think they're not coinciding with one another. More so of a conflict than a resolution. And it's detrimental that we get that right.
Understood. So what's on tap for today, boss?
Well, we're going to talk about, we're still Article 1. We moved on to Section 7 of Article 1. But before we get to the United States Constitution part, we're going to talk about the last amendment of the Florida voting amendment. You know, we talked about the Amendment 1 with the school board election, and we went through the state constitution for hunting and fishing and legalizing marijuana for adults 21 or older, state right constitutions on abortion and viability. We talked a bit about the annual inflation adjustment for the value of homestead property tax, the last amendment 6, which they want to repeal a constitutional provision providing for public campaign financing for candidates who agree to spending limits. What is that all about? This amendment was passed along a partisan line with Republicans in favor and Democrats opposes, which is typical of many of the bipartisan bills that are passed. They call it partisan, but, you know, meaning that it was drafted by a Republican. And so, of course, they favor the bill, but the Democrats opposes.
Right.
They have to agree to a public financing of campaigns running for election statewide office.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're running for the governor, if you're running for a CFO position in the governorship or attorney general or and commission of agriculture.
Okay.
If you're unopposed,
wouldn't it be unanimous?
If you're unopposed, in other words, there's nobody challenging you for that position. Okay, you can also use public dollars to campaign, but there are some caveats.
Such as?
Well, first, you know, you have to raise $150,000 if you're gubernatorial candidate. And $100,000 for cabinet candidates.
Okay.
Now, you can't use your personal loan limits are limited to $25,000 and limits political party contributions up to $250,000.
Hmm.
And they must report campaign data and submit to an audit. In other words, if you want to get some taxpayer dollars for your campaign, Those are the stipulations that you have to agree to going in. So, State Senator Travis Hudson, he's a Republican for District 7. He said he thinks it's absurd that anybody would be able to use taxpayer dollars for the purpose of campaigning. He's a Republican saying that.
Okay.
So now, this bill was drafted by the Republicans, but this is a guy that's speaking out against it. And then you have your state senator, Tina Pawlowski. She's the Democrat for District 30. And I'm not too familiar with all the districts where they stretch out to.
Okay.
This is what she said. She voted against the amendment in the Senate. And she said, it is very clear that Republican Party has a lot of money funding outside groups, special interest group, who help pay for campaigns that Democrat Party has in Florida, than Democrat parties has in Florida. As a result, it seems this would be a negative for a Democrat candidate. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the stronger party has easier access to funding, has big dollar donors, quite naturally, you know, they're going to be leading on the ticket. Now, that's where I think that campaign dollars, man, it shouldn't be about the amount of dollars that you raise or the amount of money that you spend in advertisement.
Why not?
You know, because it should be about the issues.
But, I mean, at the end of the day, what's the issues if you have nobody supporting it?
Well, but see, that's the thing. The support shouldn't be decided by the amount of money that's given.
But the amount of money is a symbolic way of showing how much support you have.
No, that's showing how much money they're willing to give. Now, if the
issue... What's the difference?
I'll show you the difference. If I decide I want to take down a traffic light, okay?
Mm-hmm.
10 people agree with me.
Mm-hmm.
So the traffic light will come down. If 10 other people disagree with me, because they put in $20, $200 or $200K, whatever you want to use, dollar amount, what difference does the money matters when the problem is the traffic light?
Because if you're talking about trying to take down the traffic light and your 10 people only give you $10, you only got $100.
I'm just saying,
but what's the price point of getting that light pulled down? You're talking about a few hundred thousand dollars to get that light pulled down.
Well, what I'm talking about is it shouldn't be a money issue, and you'll see that when I get on down in here further.
But what I'm saying is it matters as far as with the money, because if you have guys that are willing to give you $100,000 as a donation, $50,000 as a donation, $20,000 as a donation, that's more influence than the person that's only able to donate $20.
But see that,
$10.
That's why they talk about these special interest groups.
Yeah.
See, so, you know, these political PACs.
Right.
You know, that's where we go off the rail. You see, money shouldn't decide these things. These are people issues. These are your voter issues, not money. Money shouldn't decide your liberty.
Yeah, but at this point,
money shouldn't decide your liberty.
But they already decided that.
But see, this is what I'm saying. Here's the problem. It's a money issue. It's not a light issue. It's they making it a money issue.
So
here we go. Here we go.
Okay.
Here we go. No, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, if it's a money issue, then who's to say? So why is it that if... Ooh, that's on me. If it's a money issue, why is it that out of every other problem that we're having, the solution isn't more money? If money is the issue, if money isn't the issue, why is it so difficult for them to ensure that the citizens make a fair enough to survive this time?
So that turns out not to be a money issue. As a voting block, see, here's what you need to look at, how you should look at this.
Okay.
You got an issue on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
A yes or a no issue.
Mm-hmm.
The people go to the booth,
mm-hmm.
and they vote for or against. Now, what difference does it matter how much money? Because here's what I know.
Okay.
You can have one donor
uh-huh.
to put in, just as we just had with one of the campaigns. She put in $90 million into Trump's war chest.
Goodness.
One person.
Okay.
She doesn't represent the whole Republican Party. She represents herself.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it that money turns out to be the driver? And that's my point.
I get where you're coming.
That's my point. It should not be a money issue. It should be the people go to the ballot and vote for the issue. It's a people issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is what this guy's saying. Look, it doesn't matter how much money you have. You shouldn't be spending taxpayer dollars to go get a job.
My thing is, even in that aspect, what's the point of using taxpayer money when you're getting a $90 million endorsement?
Well, this is here's my point.
Well,
that's the point of this.
But I get that. But why is that? But why is this bill even a thought process if you're getting endorsement money? Why is our money, what we do, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're already taken from the education system.
So a yes vote supports. They're repealing the constitutional provision that provides for public financing of campaigns for those running for an elected statewide office who agree to campaign spending limits. See, so they want to cap it. So even at that, as a yes vote, why does it matter? You know, it's a one vote, two vote, three vote. It shouldn't be all about how much money is involved. Money should be a secondary to this, to the resolution, but not the start of the campaign, you know. So when you think about how much money a candidate raises, you know, shouldn't make him the stronger candidate because he's got, you know, $200 million in his war chest, or you know, one has $50 million.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're dealing with issues here that these individuals should be looked upon to represent, not how much money they can raise. So, but a no vote opposes repealing the constitutional provision that allows for public financing of campaigns. Therefore, continuing to allow public campaign financing for statewide candidates who agree to spending limits. So those people are opposed. So as I said, naturally, if one receives something as a negative
mm-hmm.
or a disadvantage, they might opt to oppose it as likely unto a threat.
Right.
You know, so if you're seeing this, you know, because you can't or you don't have the ability to raise the money.
Mm-hmm.
So see, right there, you opposes it because you've already said, oh, the Republican has all this pool, all these donor monies, you know, they can raise more money. So right there, they're making it a money issue when it really shouldn't be a money issue. These are people issues.
But at the end of the day, it'll forever be a money issue because whenever you need anything done, that's what you need.
Yeah, but Joe, we aren't talking about getting a road built. We're talking about installing a new candidate.
I get that.
So,
but the way that society is hitting at this current moment in time, the person, like you said in the beginning of the show, we should not make this thing a popularity thing. right? You said that at the beginning of the show. We're in a position where it's already done. It's already a popularity thing.
In some minds,
most, because the people that are looking at it in this aspect are not voting for the guy that's forgetting who he's introducing. They're wanting him to sit down, and it's a vast majority. It's not like a small percentage. It's a vast majority that wants Biden to have a seat. But at the end of the day, I would choose experience over confidence. I would rather somebody that knows what they're doing.
Well, see, here's what the people that are pushing for him to sit, what they're neglecting to realize is that this guy started a process that he's, he knows that if he abandoned presidencies now, everything he's done is going to be like in
vain. It's abolished.
Yeah, it's in vain, man. You know, so just as he said, you know, the job has to be get finished. I got to finish the job.
Absolutely.
Because if I leave now, it's not gonna finish. But still, without having to use that particular instance. Campaigns shouldn't be driven by the dollar. I don't care what the issue is. You know, if you have a perspective on things,
okay,
push your perspective. But you don't sit, you know, your back office and say, I've raised $200 million, you know, so I should have the biggest stick. You know, and essentially that's what they're saying. You remember back in Neanderthal days, they would all often say, you know, the man with the biggest stick make the rules.
Right.
You know, and so, essentially this is what this is translated to.
Okay, so let me ask a simple question of, you know, the candidates that raise this money, right? What happens to that money? Does that money just sit in the Oval Office? Does that money get sent towards what they're promising? Like what is
no,
that?
No, that money. You watch your TV. You see all that. See, and that's the other part. They take that money and they invest it in ads and billboards, negative campaigning.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the stuff that they're advocating, that they're saying, are all lies.
So the money that they're raising for the campaign, for the smearing ads and things of that nature. So that money that they're raising, these little stupid black tie, black tux affairs and things of that nature, is literally just for the smearing campaign. None of that money goes to
anything official of for the people.
Well, what the hell are we giving up that money for?
That's what they call the war chest. So they use to fight their opponent with.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this is completely biased, but this is the problem. Because you got people like, I forget the young lady's name that you mentioned that just gave $90 million towards
older
Trump.
Older lady.
You got $90 million, sweetheart. There is millions of people that are starving, trying to understand the world. That $90 million you gave Trump just to downplay Biden? That's ridiculous.
And like, many of those people are your neighbors.
A lot of them are your neighbors.
That's what I say. Many of them are.
We're in a position where 60% of the people that's making six figures are still living paycheck to paycheck. And you dropped $90 million.
Just to
downplay Biden. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well,
that's... None of that. So Pop, what you're telling me is that for all the years, 48 years of presidency, we have not had one where that money that they raise went to any official governmental projects. None of it.
All that they don't spend is still sitting in the account.
So then the question remains, what do you do? So what the people that raise the money for the guys that don't win, where do their money go?
It's a political party.
Okay.
So the money stays, all that they don't use,
okay,
for travel and...
campaigns, ads, and stuff.
Yeah. It just sits there
for the next
run.
So we got so hypothetically speaking, you know, we got We got Trump just getting $90 million. He take a
has a lot more than that.
Okay,
that
okay. So let's say he accumulated. Let's say he accumulated $325 million.
We'll just say
and campaign $325 million, right? He doesn't win hypothetically. I don't want anybody to make a seat. I don't want nobody to feel like I'm being biased. I'm just throwing out a scenario. He doesn't win. So you're telling me for 4 years, this $325 million just sits in the campaign party until it's time to run again?
Well, whatever other expenses. Now, you take him, see, a lot of his campaign money was used to pay legal fees.
Yeah.
You know. See, so it depends on what else is going on.
Okay.
You know, the money is not. In fact, I think 1 year he was accused of using campaign contributions for personal.
I mean, but it is personal when you're paying legal fees. That's your legal fees.
I'm talking about, you know, like going out to dinner. Yeah. Taking renting and tipping.
Stormy Daniels. Yeah. I'm sorry, yeah, ladies and gentlemen.
Ordinarily, I wouldn't offer suggestions to these and other issues to avoid seemingly bias to any particular party. Right. But right. To this issue now, I would comment that Senator Hudson poses a credible point.
What did he
convincing.
Say? What did he say?
Well, that was the guy that was talking about how absurd it is.
The one that was opposed to the...
The one that, well, he supports it, but he thinks it's absurd that, you know, a candidate uses taxpayer dollars. Right.
The one that's not okay with that.
Yeah, so let me show you how I think about this.
Okay. Because
this is really... It's really crazy, man.
All right.
I couldn't get a parallel example, but this is what I would do. My take would be to treat the candidate the same way the military does.
Okay.
You want a promotion? There are requirements.
Okay.
For a commissioner officer, sometimes for commissioner officers, okay, if not always, college degrees are required.
Okay.
A host of military training courses, skilled level. So that would be commissioned officers, non-commissioned officers. In case you don't know the difference when you think military. The commissioned officers has the bars, your lieutenant, captain, colonel, majors, and generals. Non-commissioned would be, you know, your privates, corporals, specialists, sergeants, staff sergeants, and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the military training courses are skilled levels.
Right.
Okay. A point-based system. You get enough points, now appear before a board or a panel to be evaluated on a pass or fail basis, okay? Then we're going to be talking about etiquettes, moral foundations, your philosophy, okay, for your party, Democrats or Republicans. Now check this out now, because I really agree with the guy, Hudson's, because I don't think that I should pay taxes for you to go get a new job. Why am I paying for your expenses of getting a new job? Now I'm not done with this. Now check this out. A point-based system, you get enough points, now appear before a board or a panel to be evaluated, pass, fail, etiquettes. We're gonna check your etiquettes, your moral foundational philosophy for whatever party, Democrats or Republicans. Now, a state or federal test for job knowledge. Okay, if you pass all of that, you get to the state or federal test for job knowledge.
Okay,
just like an attorney, you know, they go to school, do all this fine stuff, then they have to pass the bar exam.
Okay.
And then they apply for their license, and now they're legally an attorney.
Okay.
Without clients yet, but nevertheless, all preparations, skip the point. Now a state or federal test for job knowledge, all preparations at the time the candidates are going through this is the candidate's expense.
Right.
Not the taxpayers. Now, once they go through all of that, then we put their name up for vote for the position.
Right.
Now, taxpayer has nothing in that. If you go through all of the training and getting the right qualifications,
right.
Now you pass or fail. If you do not pass through, then the next guy ends up passing. Mm-hmm. That's who we end up with the job because mm-hmm. we checked his knowledge. We checked his philosophy, you mm-hmm. know, for, you know, his party mm-hmm. background. Mm-hmm. So I don't see why we have to pay for that.
I agree to a certain extent because I do agree wholeheartedly that as taxpaying citizens, we do not need to be paying for somebody else to get another job. I understand that. However, if that's going to be the new narrative, then we got to have some new order when it comes to your citizens that you're serving. If you're going to sit up there and you're going to use taxpayer dollars to pay for a campaign, then we should have more say so than what you're giving us. If we have to pay for this guy, we should have more say so of what goes down.
But see, the problem I have with the campaign dollars that they use is the fact that they are not giving us facts.
Okay.
They're smear campaigns. They're not coming on there and saying, this is what we're going to do. This is what the issues are.
Now,
you know, we're not getting that.
Now, that's, again, what I'm saying. If you're going to make us pay for the campaign, we should have more say-so. Perfect example, what you just said. We say what you're putting on these commercials because I'm paying for it. So I need to know what the issues are. I don't need to know what Trump did last year. I don't care what he did last year.
What's the resolution?
You know what I'm saying?
How are you going to solve this problem?
Exactly.
You know, what can we expect to look forward to? Don't come up here telling me that this guy peed in the bed in Nevada that the next president was going to sleep in.
And I don't mean to cut you off, but that's one of the main things that pissed me off because, listen, because they mess around and they teach us all through high school, all through middle school, in the debate team. You give the issues. If you're running for school president, you know, you're giving the issues with the solutions, and then you become an adult and you do this crap? What is this?
Exactly.
Hey,
my point.
You know, Senator Joe Walker decided to endorse a campaign that was cool with deer killing. Like, what does that have to do with the fact that gas is higher than what it's supposed to be? Like,
these are issues. They use these type issues to shift your focus on your everyday issues.
Yeah.
You know, who cares about what Biden did or didn't do?
But we need to
look. Who cares that he introduced? I'm being serious.
Yeah.
He introduced Putin, you know.
By the wrong name.
About his vice president, you know, and all this stuff. Look, man, when you know what you know,
Yeah.
Those are blunders. And while they're not acceptable, they're not incriminating.
Right.
You know, they're not criminal.
Right.
You know, the guy, you know, he we see that he's getting on the backside of things.
I mean, that's a big deal.
And I digress because I think what the party really want him to do, not so much of just step away from it, but to go and live a regular life, man. He's had a political life,
yeah,
you know, for 75 years or longer, you know, if that long.
And I don't want to sound mean, you know, when I say...
It's not mean, but...
No. I don't want to sound mean when I say this, but I don't give a damn how long he's been in there.
It doesn't matter.
What I'm saying is he is the more qualified candidate to run for more. And the beauty part about the situation of the presidency is that it ain't just him. He got Kamala on his back. Yo, Kamala got his six. You have, like, maybe she needs to step up for more conferences. Maybe... instead of him introducing this person as Vladimir Putin by mistake, maybe we let Kamala do that.
Introduction.
You know what I'm saying? Maybe we have her do more press conference. She is vice president. She should take... I feel like in this particular situation with Biden, she needs to take on more responsibilities as far as in press conferences and speeches, because he's getting there. But one thing about it is he knows how to get his ass across the other side of the countries and negotiate with these ambassadors and leaders and dictators. And he knows how to keep it civil.
Right.
You know, Trump's going to go over there and he's going to hit you like a business. Like he's going to do a master overhaul. Listen, I was going to do an invitation.
That's my point.
Yeah.
You know, although there are protocols, you know, when it comes to the role of government,
yeah,
as such, you know, and so they just, you know, trying to play it on through. He's, you know, getting up on top of the mountain,
yeah,
you know. So should we have sympathy for him? No, he doesn't.
He chose this.
Yeah, he know what he's doing.
Right.
So
he chose this. He's happy with it.
Yeah, yeah. So, but, you know, I just want to digress, if you say.
Yeah.
You know, we need to revamp or overhaul the system, because I don't feel good. Let me just say this. If I had a job interview with another company on the other side of the country, you know, how would I feel asking their employees, now not the administration, their employees to give me dollars to get over there, to get a suit, to get a hotel,
they're not gonna be happy,
you know, buy my food,
they're not gonna be happy with
you
that.
Know, so I can interview for a job to become part of your team.
They're not gonna be happy with
you
that.
Know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
So in essence, that's what these political candidates are doing.
Yeah, if they go on with that,
give us money, give us public dollars, so we can launch these bad ads.
Let me ask you a question. And this is a serious question that I've been asking a lot of guys that have been real in depth with the politics these days. Do you believe that main issue with the whole governmental process is a clash between old school, new school? Do you feel like the reason why we're having these issues is because we have modern day thought processes mashing with old school, you know, processes?
No.
You don't think so?
I really don't.
Okay.
Because here's the deal. This is Biden. Here's the deal. Here's the deal. And old B would say, look. But look, no, and it's whereby I've always seen it as a power play.
Okay.
And you'll understand that when we start talking about these Article 1, Section 7. You'll understand the power play of politics. Because Nixon brought it up. She said, hey, look, here's the power in this issue. The Republicans can raise more dollars.
Okay.
So it's not so much of the issue, because she didn't disagree with the issue. She just said it would be negative toward the Democrats because they can't raise the funds that they need.
Okay.
To combat these issues.
Right.
See, so it's all a power play.
Yeah.
Old school, new school, the issue is current.
Okay.
You know, so I don't see it as...
So you don't see it as more so of a old school method. Let's say hypothetically speaking, there's two different ways of handling interest rates. We're battling inflation. The old school way says, you know, hey, let's go ahead and let's raise, you know, interest rates up so that we can lower the payments, so that we can get, you know, da da da, so that people can afford the inflation survival. That's, you know, let's say that's an old school way of thinking, but a new school way of thinking is saying, instead of, you know, raising the interest rates, let's go ahead and reduce the price of things, the price of goods and the price of products. You know, do you believe that those two different solutions, I'm going to call them?
They different solutions for different purposes.
Different purposes, okay.
Yeah, because the two together would be what they would call counterintuitive.
Okay.
In other words, the feds push up, as we've seen, try to drive up interest rate.
Right.
To slow spending.
Okay.
The employer tried to push up prices.
Right.
To increase profits.
Right.
Okay. So if everybody pushing up, then that leaves the consumer at a disadvantage.
Yes.
But if one push up and one push down,
it helps break even.
Well, it theoretically can put you at a point of equilibrium.
Yeah.
You know, where you'd be at a break even point.
Yeah.
You know.
But so. We're never really there. Because, well, I mean, well, going into the game, I mean, it's safe to agree that going into the game, even back in the day, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, the debt-to-income ratio was always at an unfair balance. We can honestly say that. For every dollar it cost us to buy something, we made, you know, 30 to 70 cents less than. You know, so if something costs a dollar, we're probably making 30 cents an hour trying to get something that cost a dollar.
I think in 1980.
Okay.
Somewhere around that era, might have been 90s, early 90s.
Okay.
But the value of a dollar was about 67 cents, you know. So we had substantial spending power.
Yeah.
You know. As opposed to today, I think it's even less. I think it's about 36 cents.
Yeah, it's way less.
You know, way see, less. So we, you're never going to get to a point of equilibrium in the economy.
Not in the dead day.
You know, you're not, we're going to always be like the,
because the country's
at a disadvantage.
Debt. The country's in debt. So we'll never have a positive change on that.
Well, any business. And I've been arguing this, and I think I'm gonna sit down and figure it out. But you know what? You cannot operate a business without debt.
No, I was just gonna say there's not a single business that's being ran right now that doesn't have debt.
You gotta have and debt is not always bad debt.
Not always. It's just whether or not you can maintain it or not.
Well, you take our debt.
Yeah.
We can profit from our debt.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we can bond just like real estate does.
Yeah.
You know, mortgage companies, I should say.
Right.
They take the, and they package them in different dollar amounts.
Yeah.
But let's say they take $100 million worth of mortgages.
Okay.
Okay. On their books, it shows it has two sides, your left and the right of your balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
One is an asset and one is a liability.
Yeah.
Okay, but we're talking about the same properties.
Okay.
Okay. So what they could do is they can package up $100 million worth of the mortgages and sell them off. Sell them off the balance sheet.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
And clear that side of the balance sheet.
Right.
You know. So debt isn't always bad debt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's good debt. A mortgage. And there's a few people out there that would argue that a mortgage, a home mortgage, is a bad investment. And this guy, he wrote the book Think and Grow Rich, or Think Big and Grow Rich.
Okay.
You know, some like to call his name, but he's a Hawaiian guy. But he always advocate that mortgage is bad debt.
Okay. Why would he figure that?
Well, because mortgages eats up wealth.
Okay.
While it builds wealth as you pay.
Yeah.
But it consumes a lot of consumer dollars.
Yeah.
You know, your homeowner's dollars, you know,
to especially buying a house in today's time.
Yeah, you know.
$2,000.
So, but at any rate, that's a subject that, you know, that thing make your head hurt. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to get over into there.
We're not depressing the world. Yeah. We're not depressing the world.
Back to the close of that issue, you know, and I think that politicians should consider that. Look, you guys want to be politicians? Go get your credentials in order.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, get your credentials in order, and let's put up a review board. Let's put up a knowledge board. Let these guys be questioned on their knowledge base.
Hell, treat it
doing the job.
Treat it like Harvard.
Well, they, you know,
let the candidates have a mission statement.
Yeah, I mean, you know, same difference. But don't take my tax dollars to pay their way. Mm-mm. You know, because then the issues around my city now is being neglected because we done wasted the money on these guys trying to be politicians.
See, I'm looking at it
That's not benefiting your district.
I look at it more like honing in on our state, you know, or our city more in particular. You know, if you're going to use my tax dollars to pay for this job interview, that's what I'm going to call it.
Yeah, well, that's.
And then you already got us on the damn hook for the stadium. You got us on the hook for a lot of the new changes and new extended lanes on the freeways, like 295 and things of that nature.
It's but
like,
let me interrupt you because, you know, let's keep it local. When you're talking to freeways, those are federal grants.
That's federal grants?
Yeah.
I'll leave that alone.
Yeah, most of that.
I'll leave that out of it then.
But let's just speak about our east side.
Right.
You know, they've been promising for the last 25, 30 years to remove all the septic tanks in.
They sure did, yeah.
You know.
And none of that happened.
You know. So
but we're getting a stadium.
You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? So we take the tax dollars and we do other things rather than to do the things that were promised.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, so, and essentially that's what she's saying. Hey, look, man, we can't raise the money. The Republicans raise the money. They take control and does nothing for.
Yeah, the just Democrats spit in our face. So look how long it took them to start rebuilding some of these schools that have mold in them. I mean, come on, man.
Well, let's, you know, they've already talking about that too. You know,
it's almost
want to close schools, and it's that's so, part of this issue.
Yeah, it's so concerning that's not an alarming issue for people to want to resolve.
The U.S. Constitution, boy, I tell you, they got a long ways to go to get this thing about half right, you know. So we look at Article 1, Section 7. This is the process by which legislation is an act. Before the general process itself is laid out, Clause 1 of the section directs that all bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives. The Senate is given the power to respond with amendments. Okay?
All right.
So then it goes on and said, bills, that's how bills are raised. They're raised in the House of Representatives for raising revenue.
Okay.
Okay. So the process starts right there. The Senate may concur or oppose the amendment. But before it become law, it has to be presented to the president. They got to fill this, you know, do all their proposal, and they have to submit it to the president for approval.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So there's some logistics involved in that, mm-hmm. because if he approves it, he signs it into law.
Right.
If he doesn't, he returns it back to the House where it was originated, back to the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
The president's objection has to be journalized and then reconsidered. In other words, when they journalize it, they're going to be including everybody's name who voted for or against.
Mm.
Okay. Once the House representative and the Senate has reconsidered the objection with 2/3 votes now, 2/3 votes of each party, of each House,
right.
has to have 2/3. So just say if you got
66%.
66% of each party, not right. just 66% of the vote party. Yeah. So each party has to have. Now, this in order for it to... the votes of both houses, it can become law. Now, if they leave it at that,
mm-hmm.
you know, then it can become law.
Right.
But before they can get to that point, they have to vote yays and nays with the name of each person and how they voted for or against.
Okay.
Okay. Now, this seemed like trivial. Seemed like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's like jury work.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the process. And if you neglected this process,
mm-hmm.
and then your bill is challenged, you can't prove or show who voted for or against, then you're leading for some reprimandations, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All bills has to be sent back to the president within 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they miss that window, then they got another issue.
Mm-hmm.
they pointed this out, not including Sunday. Sunday is not counted.
Of course not.
After the first presentation to him, once it was first presented to the president,
mm-hmm.
the 10 days start. But you have to skip Sunday. Sunday is not counted.
Mm.
Go figure. Go to church Sunday. I don't know. Nobody works on Sunday.
It's I very
what
weird.
That's all about.
It's a very weird day because you'll count Saturday, but you won't count Sunday.
Yeah, you know, and you've known them to go into sessions on, you know, certain days, and I don't know, Sunday they just don't do anything, I guess.
That's so weird.
And it says the bill shall become law if he had signed it.
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Congress obstruct, and this is what all the infighting comes up,
mm-hmm.
it says if Congress obstruct its return,
right.
in other words, they refuse to accept or to return it,
mm-hmm.
okay, it shall not become law. And it says this process applies to every order and resolution in the government.
Okay.
Okay. And it specifically states that only the House of Representatives can write bills.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nobody else. The president can't. Senate can't. The senators can oppose bills and write amendments. But then they still, too, has to be voted upon,
mm-hmm.
you know. So a lot of people think that the president sits up here and he write all, do all, you know. No, that guy, man, he does not do all of that stuff now. And you're going to hear about that in a minute, because if Congress obstruct its return, it shall not become law. This process applies to every order and resolution. But they go on to say that FDR, Roosevelt, is said to have vetoed 635 bills, the most of any president. And to date, President Biden has only vetoed 12. And get the one that he vetoed on 31st of March this year. The summary says that my administration will not support measures that jeopardizes, now this is a guy thinking about the country and not about the businesses. And this is how he approached it. He said, my administration will not support measures that jeopardizes the well-being of consumers and investors. Okay. Appropriate guardrails that protect consumers and investors are necessary to harness the potential benefit and opportunities of talking about cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. You know, because that thing went off track.
Way off track.
And so he says, look, we're not gonna let them get away with that again. That's not gonna happen. Uh-huh. So, but at any rate, that's what it's all about. And if they do not like the bill, if the president don't like the proposed bill, he don't sign it.
Right.
You know, he sent it back to the House, where it was originated at.
They revise that.
They revise it if they will, or if they don't want to.
Right.
If they get, you know, like I said, the House and the Senate, if they get both sides, 2/3, to vote for it to stay as it is, then it can become law.
Yeah.
But what are the chances of both sides seeing eye to eye today? You know, it's not going to happen. But at any rate, that's all about.
Okay. You know?
So,
right now, I tell you what, though, you trying to take my money to allow somebody to take a job interview, I better be a part of some of those veto votes.
No, look, I better be in somebody's payoff.
Nah, not even.
Well, no.
Whatever bill y'all writing, I better be able to proofread it.
Well, no. Look, whatever. If you're taking my tax dollars, to get a job,
right?
Okay. Whatever party you represent, okay, you need to direct some of the issues toward my community.
Right.
In other words, don't just take my money and spend all your time and dollar efforts, you know, over on Ponte Vedra or
golfing,
you know, or over on the San Marco area, you know. Look, it doesn't matter as long as you're spending the dollars in our community, you know, north, south, east, west, it doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, but the point of it is, I think it's bad that we have to contribute to those guys in acquiring those jobs. You know, that's the way I look at it.
Anyway. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, y'all been tuned in to Walk of the Walker. What do y'all think about how laws are processed, formed, and put into the world? How do y'all feel about the idea that the president can say yay, nay, send it back? How do y'all feel about just the idea that a lot of these bills are made without asking us anything?
Right.
You know what I mean? Ladies and gentlemen, what more can we say other than eyes open? I hope y'all are paying attention. I hope y'all are
aware, yeah.
I hope y'all are paying close attention on what's going on.
You speak at the ballot, you know, and it's unfortunate that a lot of these issues are not brought to the forefront. They're done in back office, if you will.
Right.
You know, so every chance you get, look at your candidate the guy that you support,
mm-hmm.
support the issues. The issues are what's important.
Right.
And if you support the issues, your heart would never be deceived. You know, so, but we fight this battle, like I said, at the voting box. So be prepared when November 5th arrives.
And you can always tune in to Walk of the Walker on Spotify, Hulu, Prime, or, you know, all your other podcast platforms. Like we say in every episode, if you don't vote, you can't complain.
Can't complain.
You know, this is by far one of the most important elections of today's time. We got to be ready. Take a day throughout the week.
And we don't just, yeah, we, here's what we really have. And you guys have heard this time and time again. You probably heard the former president saying the same thing.
Hmm.
You know, you've heard the current President Biden say as much. Democracy is at stake.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And if you don't understand what that means, think about what it would be like if you lived in a communist country.
Right.
Think about if you lived in a country where your freedoms has been suppressed.
Or revoked.
Are revoked.
Because that's on the line, whether we want to admit that or not.
Think about your liberty gone. So who best to secure those things for your future, you decide.
What more can we say? Y'all stay blessed out there. Remember, it's up to us to make our future. Y'all stay blessed, man. One love.
Oh, man.